Let me start with a number that doesn't sound like it belongs to an aircraft. 1 wingspan. That's how high off the water this thing flies. Not 1,000 feet, not 500. Roughly 1 wingspan above the surface of the sea, which for the machine I want to talk about today is something like 40 to 60 feet. It skims. And by staying down in that thin cushion of air between the wing and the water, it does something that has teased engineers for the better part of a century. This is Radio Hangar. I'm Vector, and this is Clear Direct, the show where we take the machines that sound like science fiction and figure out whether the physics actually closes. Today it's a company called Regent, and an all-electric vehicle they call the Viceroy Sea Glider. It is not quite a boat, it is not quite an airplane, and the reason it exists is one of the most elegant loopholes in all of aerodynamics. Let's break this down. Before we get into the wing, let me thank the people keeping the lights on for this segment. This one is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey. Beautifully made and built to last. If you've got a check ride behind you or one coming up, that's a coin worth carrying. AviationSoul.com. Okay, ground effect. Every one of you has felt it. You're on short final, you bring it across the fence, you start your flare, and the airplane just doesn't want to quit flying. It floats, it cushions. Students hate it because it makes them balloon. Old hands love it because it makes a greaser feel easy on a calm day. Here's what's actually happening. Your wing makes lift by throwing air downward. That downward push has a cost, and the cost is drag. Specifically, it's a kind of drag called induced drag, the drag that comes bundled with the lift itself, out at the wingtips. High pressure under the wing curls around to the low pressure on top, and it rolls up into those trailing vortices, those little tornadoes coming off each tip. Those vortices are the fingerprint of induced drag. They are wasted energy. Now, drop that same wing down close to the ground. The surface gets in the way. It blocks those vortices from fully forming. It squeezes that curl around at the tips. The downwash behind the wing flattens out. And suddenly, your wing is making the same lift for a lot less drag. How much less? Here's what most people miss. When you get the wing down to about 1/10 of its span above the surface, induced drag can fall by something on the order of 50%. Half, get it right down close, and the whole wing behaves like it suddenly grew longer and more efficient than it has any right to be. The data tells an interesting story here because efficiency in flight is usually a brutal trade. You want less drag, you build a longer, skinnier wing, like a glider. That buys you efficiency but costs you weight and structure and hangar space. Ground effect is different. Ground effect gives you the efficiency for free. You just have to agree to fly incredibly close to the surface, and that incredibly close is the whole problem. It's why this idea has a graveyard behind it, because people have chased this before. Let's talk about the ghost in the room. Back in the Cold War, the Soviets went all in on this. They built machines they called ekranoplans from the Russian for screen glider, the screen being that ground effect cushion. The most famous one got a nickname from Western intelligence that stuck forever. The Caspian Sea Monster. It was enormous, longer than a Boeing 747, powered by a bank of jet engines up front, and it roared across the Caspian a few meters off the water at 300 knots. There was a later one, the Luna-class, that carried anti-ship missiles on its back, and they mostly didn't work out. They were brutally hard to control. Fly too high, you climb out of ground effect, and the efficiency vanishes and the thing is now a terrible underpowered airplane. Fly too low, you catch a wave, and you're a very fast shipwreck. They couldn't turn well, because banking a wing toward the water when you're 1 wingspan up is a fast way to put a wingtip in the sea, and in any real chop, the ride was violent and the risk was ugly. So the ekranoplan became a piece of aviation trivia. The magnificent Soviet dead end. Cool posters, no future. That's the baggage Regent is carrying when they say they want to fly a wing and ground effect and actually sell it. So the honest question is, what do they have that the Caspian Sea Monster didn't? Three things, and this is where it gets genuinely clever. The first thing is the hydrofoil. This, to me, is the key insight the whole company turns on. The old ekranoplans had to get up on that ground effect cushion straight off the water's surface, plowing through the waves the entire time they accelerated. That transition from floating to flying was the violent part. It's where the wave impacts live. Regent's Viceroy doesn't do that. It has three phases and it moves through them like a stepladder. Phase 1, it floats. It sits on its hull in the harbor like a boat. It pulls away from the dock at low speed on electric power. Quiet, no fuss, operating under maritime rules like any other vessel. Phase 2, it rises up onto hydrofoils. Foils are little underwater wings on struts. As the boat speeds up, those submerged wings make lift in the water, and the whole hull lifts up clear of the surface. Now you're riding on these thin struts above the chop, and the ride smooths out dramatically. Anyone who's watched America's Cup sailing in the last decade has seen this. Those boats flying above the water on foils. Same physics, the foils let the Viceroy climb up out of the rough water while it's still going slow enough to be gentle about it. Phase 3. Once it's foiling and fast, the wing takes over. It lifts off the foils and settles into that ground effect cushion, one wingspan off the water, and now it's flying. Cruising somewhere around 180 miles an hour. So the foil is the shock absorber for the scary part. It gets the vehicle up out of the wave-slapping regime before it commits to flight. That single idea solves a huge chunk of what made the old machines so unpleasant and so dangerous.
The second thing Regent has that the Soviets didn't is modern electric propulsion and modern flight control. The Viceroy is battery electric, driven by a set of propellers mounted up on the wing. Distributed electric propulsion means you've got a bunch of independent motors instead of a couple of giant temperamental jet engines. You can vary thrust across them precisely, thousands of times a second, and you can use that for control. Pair that with modern fly-by-wire, with computers minding your height above the water and your attitude, and you've taken the twitchiest, most workload-heavy part of Ekranoplan flying, and handed it to a control system that never blinks. The Caspian Sea Monster was flown by test pilots wrestling raw cables and hydraulics. This is a different century of control authority. The third thing is honestly the most important, and it's not technical at all. It's regulatory, and you're going to appreciate why. The Viceroy is designed on purpose to be certified as a boat, not an airplane, because it never leaves ground effect. It stays within a wingspan of the surface the entire flight. Under maritime law, a vehicle operating that close to the water is a wing and ground effect craft, and it falls under the International Maritime Organization and the Coast Guard, not the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA. It's regulated as a high-speed vessel. Now think about what that dodges. Certifying a genuinely new airplane with the FAA is a decade-long, deeply expensive gauntlet. And it should be, because airplanes fall out of the sky. Certifying a fast boat is a real process too. The Coast Guard is not a pushover, but it is a known, faster, cheaper path. By staying low, Regent sidesteps the single biggest thing that kills electric aviation startups, which is the multi-year wait for an airworthiness certificate on a novel design. Here's the honest reframe. A lot of what looks like clever engineering on the Viceroy is really clever regulatory strategy wearing an engineering costume. Staying in ground effect isn't just about the drag savings, it's about which rulebook you get to be judged by. That is a systems thinking move, and I have a lot of respect for it. So what does it actually buy a passenger? Let's talk numbers, spelled out honestly. The Viceroy is designed to carry 12 passengers plus 2 crew. Range on today's batteries is about 180 nautical miles. Cruise speed around 180 miles an hour. So this is a coastal machine. Think island to island in Hawaii. Think Boston to New York down the coast. Think the Gulf, the Adriatic, the short island hops in Southeast Asia, where today your choices are a slow ferry or an expensive little float plane or helicopter. And here's where the electric part genuinely shines instead of just sounding green. On a route like that, over water from a harbor, the Seaglider needs no runway, no airport, no control tower. It uses existing docks. The operating cost, because electricity is cheap compared to jet fuel and electric motors have almost nothing to maintain, is projected to be dramatically lower than a helicopter doing the same trip. And it's quiet, and there's no local emissions. For a specific kind of short coastal hop, the economics look better than anything flying that route today. Now the caveats, because I will not sell you vaporware without them. Caveat 1 is the one that haunts every battery aircraft. 180 miles is a real limit. And batteries don't cheat physics. Jet fuel holds something like 40 to 50 times more energy per pound than the best batteries you can buy today. Regent is upfront that the early Viceroy is a short-haul machine and that longer range waits on battery chemistry that hasn't shipped yet. They talk about a bigger vehicle down the line, a 100-passenger craft they call the Monarch, but that's further out and leans on batteries that are still on the roadmap, not the shelf. Believe the ranges you can buy, not the ranges on the slide. Caveat 2 is sea state. Ground effect only works over a reasonably flat surface. The foil helps enormously in getting airborne. But if the waves out on your route are taller than the height you're trying to cruise at, you have a problem. Regent has published an operational limit, and the number they've talked about is handling waves up to something like 5 or 6 feet. That covers a lot of protected coastal water on a lot of days. It does not cover open ocean in a gale. This is a fair weather, protected water machine, and the weather is going to cancel flights. Any operator planning around it has to plan around that. Caveat 3 is traffic. A wingspan off the water is exactly where the other boats are. Fishing vessels, jet skis, floating debris, a whale surfacing. An airplane at 8,000 feet has an empty sky. A sea glider at 40 feet is sharing a crowded, unpredictable surface with everything else that floats, and it's closing at 180 miles an hour. Sense and avoid down on the deck is a hard, unsolved in the general case problem, and it's going to shape where these things are actually allowed to run. So where does it really stand today in the summer of 2026? Because this is the part where a lot of shows would wave their hands. Regent has flown a full-scale prototype. Late in 2024, they got their first crewed full-size Viceroy up and foiling, and into the ground effect regime in the water off Rhode Island with human beings aboard. And that is a genuine milestone. A quarter-scale model flew before that, so this is not a render, this is not a startup with a pretty animation and a press release. There is aluminum, or rather carbon fiber, in the water, and it has carried people. They've announced a manufacturing facility, they've announced orders and interest from ferry operators, and from a few defense customers, because the military looks at a fast, quiet, radar-low vehicle that resupplies islands without a runway, and gets very interested, and they're working through certification with the Coast Guard on that maritime path we talked about. The honest timeline. Regent is targeting entry into commercial service in the second half of this decade. So call it around 2027 or a bit after for the first paying routes. I'd hold that loosely, the way you hold any first of its kind schedule, because the gap between flew a prototype and carries fare paying passengers every day in revenue service is enormous, and it's where optimistic timelines go to get humbled. But it is a real gap they're standing in front of. Not a fantasy one. Here's what I keep coming back to. For 100 years, ground effect has been this tantalizing free lunch that nobody could actually eat, because the machines that used it were unmanageable and terrifying. What Regent has done is not invent new physics. The physics is old. What they've done is wrap that old, efficient, dangerous idea in 3 modern layers, the hydrofoil to tame the takeoff, the electric fly-by-wire to tame the control, and the maritime certification to tame the paperwork. And any one of those alone wouldn't be enough. Together, they might just turn the Caspian Sea monster's dead end into a business. Whether it becomes a real piece of how coastal regions move, or another beautiful, clever thing that never quite scales, we're going to find out this decade. But it's the most convincing crack anyone has taken at this in 50 years, and I think it's worth watching closely. My thanks to Regent's own published technical material and test results, and to the long, well-documented history of the Soviet Ekranoplan programs for the details behind today's breakdown. You can find more of what we do over at RadioHangar.com. That's the thing about the future of flight. Sometimes it isn't a faster jet or a taller rocket. Sometimes it's an old idea, flown one wingspan off the water, that finally found the 3 things it was always missing. I'm Vector. Keep looking at how it works. I'll see you next time.